All right, so that's the prelude. And this is actually going to be probably, this song, in my opinion, is going to win Grammy, if not even the Cinematic Awards. Were you all able to hear that? Excellent. Jewel? Excellent. That's what I was trying to play on the video, along with the cool video. I'm going to figure out how that works for the next time, because I think it's a cool tool for Chatmosa without violating, I hope, any copyrights, because I think it's less than 2 minutes that you have to play without getting a whole bunch of cray-cray. And it's also one of the official trailers. So let's go really move forward quickly. We talk about Sinners, and we... Everybody always talks about, you know, why were the Choctaw there? What's going on? How did this happen? But in the exposition, it outlines everything. As my friend Jewel says, the exposition is what gives clarity to the movie. When Annie is talking, and Annie actually is the narrator, the legend, gift, there we go, with the exposition. There are legends of people. The legend gift of making music so true it can pierce the veil between life and death. The Irish, the Choctaw, firekeepers, conjuring spirits, past and future, in West Africa, called the Griot, could bring healing and also evil. The fact is, I think a lot of people miss that. And while they're watching the movie, I watched this movie 4 times. Initially, the first time, I was like, I don't understand. But then I was like, oh, man, I wasn't paying attention. And that's the importance of the exposition, to get clarity on the movie. As Jewel has put up in the Jumbotron, you can see the legend being spoken with graphic images, which I just think it's amazing. It's amazing. Now, this movie starts with Sammy walking in to the church. He's got scratches on his face. You don't know what's happening. The viewer is watching this, and the viewer is saying, what's going on? And you realize, oh, this is going to be good. This is going to be good, right? Because all people thought was this was a vampire movie. Let me preface this by saying neither Jewel or I are critics. We are not paid journalists. We are not academics. Nothing wrong with any of that. I've listened to many, many people's views, but the one view I listened to, which I think was absolutely important, was Ryan Coogler, when he explained why he did this movie. And I think it was important. I said to Jewel, I think it would be funny if this was just a social experiment, just to see how everyone looked at it. I saw it, like I said, 4 times, and the 4th time I got very emotional because the reality of what I was watching became incredibly clear to me. Now, this starts in 1932 in Clarksdale, Mississippi, literally 1 day earlier. All of this happens in 1 day, 1 night, okay, before the church scene. Sammy walks into the church. It's huge. He looks terrible. His father says, Sammy, put that guitar down, you know, and one day, you're going to play that music and you're going to bring the devil home. Okay. And that was a premonition. That was the telling. That was the beginning of the end, I think, but also the beginning of the beginning. Jewel, bring us into the movie itself with Smoke and Stack as they come in.
Thank you so much. As you said, we're brought into the church, and Sammy's father says, if you don't be careful, you keep going to dance with the devil, it's going to follow you home. And as he walks into the church, we know that it starts off with the song, This Little Light of Mine. He decides that he's going to tell his story. And then this is an entire, as Nikita said, an entire day. And we walk in with Stack wearing the red hat and Smoke wearing the blue. And they're sitting by their car and they're waiting outside of a giant warehouse-like barn. And the imagery First of all, let me just say that this film in and of itself speaks to artistry in every form. As we saw with the exposition, we have drawn, hand-drawn entire stories from beginning to end. We see the depiction of facial features and cultural representation absolutely in every single bit of it. When we come in to see that we're starting this movie, y'all need to pay attention to the lighting. You need to pay attention to the colors. You need to pay attention to where we are in terms of good, bad, evil, righteousness. You know, it really is a beautiful thing. Stack's color is red. Smoke's color is blue. The church is pristine white. And Sammy walks in dripped in blood, which, you know, is the color of red. We have twin brothers played by Michael B. Jordan, a phenomenal actor, amazing the way he depicts these two different distinct characters and their identical twins. They're identical twins who are very connected at a level that you would expect twins to be, and yet so distinct in how they see the world, how they interact with the world, but never distinct in how they want to make sure they protect each other and their community. I thought that was very unique. So they're waiting outside of this big warehouse for somebody and someone. And I'm going to mention something. Nikita and I had this conversation, and we can't wait to hear your feedback. While they're out there, they're smoking, and they're sharing one cigarette between the two of them. Because remember, they're twins. And in this warehouse barn behind them that they're waiting at their vehicle, the camera pans in, and the first face you see is the red hat gentleman. And we know that's Stack. And as he comes into view, a bird in the background flies in the background into view. And then the camera pans out, and we have a blue hat wearing gentleman, and we now know that's Smoke. And then another bird comes into view. They share a cigarette back and forth. They're not sharing any words. They're just sharing this smoke. And in comes a vehicle, and another bird swoops in at the far right corner as this gentleman in the new vehicle that they're waiting for comes out, steps out of the car, and it's a white man, chubby white man. And they start talking. We now know as we walk into the building that these two gentlemen, Sack and Smoke, they want to purchase this building from the individual that just arrived. And they notice that there's something interesting about the building because the floors have been washed rather quickly and recently, almost as if the night before or a few days before. And the white man gets a little upset that they're questioning the status and the cleanliness and what the building looks like. He's like, I thought you wanted to buy this place. I mean, you either going to buy it or you're not. And we see in that moment the personalities between the twins. Because one is ready to start shooting and ask questions later. And the other one is ready to make a deal and get this done. Because then nothing's going to stop the deal from happening. And we start seeing the deviation of, even though they look exactly alike, these two brothers, these twins are slightly different in how they accomplish what they want to accomplish together. They make a deal and they get back in the car. And we know that there's a truck involved, and the truck is filled with stuff. And they end up at the church. We get back to the church and we have Sammy and the preacher, who we now find out is his father, you know, trying to counsel him that how he's living his life is not exactly the way he would like him to. Now, Sammy has come in from work. He's a sharecropper. He's been in the field. He worked all day. He did his job. He did what he was supposed to do. He's got his work clothes on. He had changed. He did what his mama asked him to do when he walks into the church, and his dad says, what are you doing? Do me a favor. Read this verse for me. And he stands up at the pulpit and he looks at the verse and he starts reading it. And his dad is looking at him, and you could see there's admiration in his father's face, because okay, the young man has a method of delivering the word. And then Sammy looks at him, closes the book, and continues to go without the need of having to reference the Bible. He knows the Bible from beginning to end. We get that from him. And he says, okay, I'm done. I did what you asked me to do, and I know the good word. I'm out. And his father says, where are you going? He says, I'm going to go play. And he, that's where we get this warning. If you keep dancing with the devil, one day he's going to follow you home. And then you hear a honking of the horn, and he runs out, and the twins are there. And turns out he's there. They're there for Sammy because they cousins. And the adventure starts. They're going into town. We have so many moments of symbolism in just that few beginnings and that few moments of time. We get to the truck that they had parked earlier, and Sammy's interested, what's going on, what's going to happen, and he wants to know what's in the truck. Why are you guys even back? And as his curiosity gets piqued, because he wants knowledge of what's in the truck, he moves the tarp, and a snake is there, ready, and a venomous snake at that, a rattler. A rattler is there, and he gets saved by one of his cousins. And he said, how about you do me a favor? How about you pay attention to what we tell you to do, and we'll take care of this. This is our business. And that was Smoke. And Smoke tells him to go with Stack. Then Smoke will take care of what this is, and you go with Stack and go handle the other stuff. And there we see a very loving relationship of these two men making sure they're protecting not just their family, but what's going on with what they're preparing. Nikita?
Thank you. Thank you, Jewel. And that was a very good intro. Before we move on, welcome to Blurred Words. I'm Nikita and my co-host Jewel. We are back in Sinners. It was so brilliant. We're so excited to be doing it. Ryan Coogler, I think he made a masterpiece here. So when we talk about Smoke and Stack, the hats are important, right? For me, right? Blue hat, deadly but good. Red hat, good and deadly, right? Smoke is the blue hat. Stack is the red hat. And we look at what they do when they come into town, as Jewel was saying, and we realize, well, you know, they're getting their stuff together for the party, right? And we look at these things, but I was looking at it more in a focused view in the story. I started looking at nuances in the fourth one after reading what Mr. Coogler had to say when he talked about Mississippi, and he talked about the road is comprised of three lines. As long as you stayed in your lane and didn't cross, whether it was Chinese crossing over to the white side or vice versa, things were okay. And that revelation, he said, stuck with him, that people in the South had to stay in their place, and how places and spaces get defined in isolation. It's an interesting thing. When Jewel was talking about when they went into the place and they, you know, down on the floor, you know, they knew that was blood, right? I think they understood who they were dealing with. Well, of course, we know he did, because he said, if you come back again, I'm going to blow you away. And Jewel is right. We had a conversation about the crows, the three crows, right? The first one we see initially with the brothers, then at the house. The three crows, premonition. Jewel had her ideology. I had mine. Since we only have 90 minutes, we're not going to get into it till after, because I think everybody's got an idea of it. But those were that was a premonition. Regardless of how you look at it, it was a premonition. And it was important. And there was relevance. Even to when the vampire, who we don't know he's a vampire. We know he's smoking, though, so we know something's wrong with him. And those of us that like the horror genre are like, oh, he's the vampire because they like smoking. And he goes to that house and he knocks on the door and he tells the lie. And then you see the Native Americans come up, and then you see the Klan outfits. Now, I think it's an interesting thing when you think about who's watching this movie and why we're watching this movie. We as Black people, you know, a lot of times will say, I'm so sick of slave movies, of trauma, of this, that, and the other. This wasn't that. This wasn't that. This was a social report. This was education on music and how it affects us, and how we can speak to the ancestors and open doors always through our music, always through our music. This was, even in suffering and pain, you find joy. Even in a crowded room with a lot of things happening, you're still having a good time. Gambling, dancing, drinking, you know? And then what happens? That element comes into play. And that element was designed to taint us, so to speak. But remember this, someone was already invited in that we know probably shouldn't have been there, as we always say about the cookout. But a lot of people have different opinions about that. You know, I think they alluded to it so many times when Sammy says, isn't she white? And we're talking about the train scene initially where we meet Mary, right? And then you see that, you know, Stack kind of plays that off, right? But we know, because those of us that grew up in the South, we understand, you know, one drop of blood, the way it is, brown bag theory, all of that. And then we also see that she insinuates herself by saying, I didn't ask to be white, you know? Well, for me, it was like, okay, but you look white. So, you know, that's a danger to those gentlemen, you know? And not everybody had the luxury to pass. And I don't say that in a cryptic way. I'm saying in those times. All right, because I have my own commentary on that. And we are, of course, in Mississippi. And there are many statements in this movie that made me go, man, this was brilliantly said. I'm going to give the young brother, Mr. Coogler, his props. First of all, I've lived in the South pretty much my whole life since I've been here. You know, first in Missouri, then Arkansas. And I'm going to tell you this. When Sammy asked him about Chicago and he said, Chicago ain't the blip word, but Mississippi with tall buildings. Yeah, that's a fact, because people always think the South is the only prejudice that there is. Okay. And then when Smoke was in town and he taught the young girl math, he wanted to teach her her worth. And it showed me he really respected young women. He also understood the difficulties he was for them in a community full of men, white and black, and how she would be seen. She had to know her worth. All right. And she's the one that watched her car. I looked and I was like, oh, he could have picked any of these boys. He could have picked any of these young men. He trusted her. The thing that everybody points out, that Asians were able to work on both sides. But what you didn't realize is the male worked on the black side. The woman worked on the white side. And the women were the ones able to go back and forth to each side. In the little girl, you know, who seemed a little hard to me for a little girl, but I'm just saying, I'm not going to talk about that. Okay. And how the twins were together and how they manifested together. And then when we went to the train station itself, a lot of people would say, well, look, black and white people got along. White people were in the front of the train. Black people had to walk all the way back to the Pullman trolleys. I don't know if anyone noticed that. The big Pullman. Very good. Very good. All right. And the reality is there was a lot of history in this movie, and there was a lot of links to the title. When they went and met the harmonica player, you know, and he told Sammy, don't compete with him. But what I heard was when he talked about himself and he was, you know, trying to give him the money to get him to come to the juke joint. And this is where we get. You get a reference to Sinner in the church. You get a reference to Sinners from the gambling and the things that Smoke and Stack does. You get a reference to Sinners from the hoodoo that his lady practices, right? And then he says, a sinner like me, I can't ask for more than that, when he was really literally talking about a premonition of his death. If he lives past today, some good drink, some good music, some good partying, literally. Premonition. And this is where we see Sammy meets his lady, Pearline, at the train station, impactful to him throughout his life. And then we meet everyone who is going to be so important for the beginning and the end of this night. You know, but it all starts with the church. And as Jules pointed out, they were playing This Little Light of Mine. And then we get to the music. So everyone's at the juke joint now. Everyone is getting together. Everyone is in each corner, from the front door to the back door to the top, right? To the balcony, right? And then you realize, you know, about the money. Something we don't think about. Both Stack and Smoke had green dollar bills, but the workers in the field had wooden coins, you know, and that was legitimate cash to them. And he diminished it without the reality. And Annie should have told him when he said that money, no one can spend that anywhere, you know, but here. And he tried to give her greenbacks. And she said, I don't care. I don't need that. I want my money, because she spends it with her people. Because let's be clear, currency is a social construct. But it's real because it spins like it. But does it spin like that on the white side or the black side? Could they take those wooden nickels to the white side? So I thought that was pretty impactful to me. And it really made me realize just what a social construct cash is, you know? Because Smoke and Stack made Stash cash king. And in the club, you realize this is they working out in those fields as slaves. And this is what they're getting paid, wooden nickels. You hear me? And the decency of Annie to take that, right? Because she knew for their labor, and they wanted to have fun, this was their currency. This was the currency of the people. And this was the price for the fun. I thought it was really beautiful. I thought it was something to think about. And a lot of people maybe didn't think about that. They would say, oh, that's minutia. That doesn't really matter, because the bigger thing is the vampire. The bigger thing is the man out there getting ready to, you know, be a culture vulture. The music starts playing and we get that beautiful, beautiful, beautiful ancestral scene. Here's the truth about the blues. Everybody wants to be us, but nobody wants our blues. But everybody wants to hear the blues. They don't want to live the blues. And in that room that night, the ancestors were called. And they move through, in between, everywhere. The beginning, the middle, the end, the past, the present, the future. And it all came from Sammy, from that song, from his guitar, from his voice. Because the culture comes from us. And the culture is spread through our ancestors. And our ancestors are the beginning, the middle, and the end of everyone. There was only one core culture not called. And that was the Black Irish. And he came because he thought Sammy carried their ancestors. Now, this is my view, and this is how I saw it. And it was so, I felt it. I felt the call. I felt it. And I just thought it was beautiful, how they melded everything through. It was the most beautiful cinematic visual of time, of the present, like I said, of the past and of the future. It was taking the voice and the call and making it literally come from the heavens to now. And everyone was represented. The Asians, the Africans, everyone was represented. And it brought the demon, premonition. What the father said, you are able to open the veil between life and death. Sammy held that spirit, that gift. He held that gift for the call. And that was the awareness I saw there. I'm going to run it to Jewel, and she can bring us through there to the significance of the vampire, in my opinion. Jewel?
Thank you so much. That was a beautiful explanation of the movie and what it represented. The vampire, Remick, is, we see, as Nikita said earlier, being hunted by the Choctaw, the indigenous folks, as he's smoking in the sunlight. banging on doors, and he begs a white couple to allow him to come in. And as they hold him at gunpoint, he states that he's being hunted by indigenous people. They don't believe him because why would indigenous people be here? The closest indigenous people are too far away. And he says, no, really, they really are hunting me. And he realizes that there's Klansmen garb clothing behind them, and appeals to their nature, and they protect him. In this scene, we see the three birds hovering as he runs in towards their little cabin, and then they land on the roof. And now we have three on the roof. With these two individuals, we have the indigenous folk come to the door, knock on the door, and say, we're looking for a white man. He's not what you think he is. He is something much more dangerous. I hope you didn't allow him to come into your house. Please, if you know where he is and if he's there, it's important that we have him before the sun goes down. And then we know, yeah, what we saw in the beginning was real. He really was on fire. And the indigenous man is told, hey, we got to go. The sun is getting down. They've already allowed the monster in. We can't help them. And almost as if we have a moment of, you know not what you're doing, he leaves a blessing upon the house that they are protected by their God or God. And they dip out. The indigenous folk go. And we see in this moment, it's revealed that Remick is a vampire because she comes back with the shotgun and said, and calls her husband. Her husband doesn't answer. And she's like, you know, there really were some indigenous folks chasing him and they're gone now. And that's when she sees, oh no, they let a monster in. But monsters would let other monsters in, right? Because birds of a feather flock together. And now we have three. Where there was one, now there is three. As Nikita said, Sammy has the gift that we learn about in the exposition. He has the ability to heal his community, but as that last picture describes, it also attracts evil because it has the ability to see, to touch a space bigger than the present. You're connected to your ancestors, so you see your past and you're united and connected to it, but you also call to the future and the power of that growth and that wealth and that prosperity and where you get to go and the rising into the heavens. That night, they invite everyone they can. Delta Slim, the harmonica player, who really says, you know, what more can a sinner ask for? And we have all the sinners in line. We have the young lady, Miss Perlene. She's by the train station. Sammy takes a liking to her. And she says, watch yourself, preacher boy. I'm married. And he says, you know, and what I got to do with me? And we see the glimpses of how sin is defined by each new character that's being introduced. We are now at the Juke Joint. And it's pumping, it's jumping, it's alive. It is amazing. As we move into the future with the song, we have a depiction of the great Ernie Barnes's artistry. And if you're familiar with Ernie Barnes or familiar with Good Times, there is a picture of a juke joint and people, our people, Black folks dancing in a place just free of the burdens that the world has placed upon us. It is nothing but soul, rhythm, enjoyment, love, and just people enjoying the music. And there is a poster that Ryan Coogler created that almost reflects that. And it encapsulates what the juke joint was supposed to be, a freedom of what is outside that we have inside. And to me, the symbolism was inside us. Not only do we have the bloodline of our ancestors and everything we bring forward to the future with that, but we have our community, we have our culture, and we protect it. The walls of this juke joint will serve as the protection of what is held within. And through his gift, Sammy attracts evil, the three vampires. They come knocking. We hear the symbolism of who's allowed in and who's not. And we know this because when Mary shows up to the door, Cornbread doesn't really recognize her, and eventually she's let in. And when the vampires show up, Miss Annie goes to the door. Cornbread is watching the door. Mary standing with Annie behind her. And the brothers are there. And they are wondering what a bunch of white folks are doing in the middle of nowhere where a bunch of black folks are trying to enjoy themselves. Because if white people come knocking at night, it's nothing but trouble, right? And they allude to something like that. I'm not going to repeat it because, you know, you had to watch the movie for the line. And Remick asks and says, we heard this, some music we brought our instruments to play, and we just want to join for love and fellowship. And they say, nah, go about your business. They go back and forth. And then he looks at Mary and says, why is she there? She tries to defend herself, and Annie holds up her hand and says, she's here because she's family. So now we know how Annie feels about Mary, and it is an understood of who's allowed in and who's not allowed in, and the protection of the walls stand. It isn't until we see Annie talking about what's going on and how it's working. Smoke and Stack have a discussion about money. They're very upset, as Nikita said. They don't agree on it. Stack actually wants to accept the nickels, and Smoke is like, nah, we can't. And understanding that there's this fight between both of them, Mary decides she's going to stick a nose in where it doesn't belong. And she goes to Stack and says, you really going to turn away those folks? What if they have money to spend? And he's like, we don't need that kind of money. She said, but you don't know that. You don't know that. He knows very well, like everybody else knew inside, that they didn't want that trouble, which is why they sent them away. But she insists. And he says, okay, sure. She leaves and meets up with the vampires that, knowing she's in there, it was only a matter of time before they would be able to go in, because she would be the way in. She would be the way in. She comes out, sits, and listens to them, and they're singing a song. And they start talking to her in a way that almost is hypnotic. But what I noticed was, it was hypnotic to her because she felt like she belonged there. Nothing they said was going to appeal to those within the juke joint. Once she realizes, oh, snap, and like shakes it off and comes to her senses, she gets offended, gets up, walks away, but it's too late. She's now turned her back to the monster, allowing him to swoop in, fly in, and change her. Where there was three, there is now four. It is through her that the monsters get in the first time. She comes into Cornbread and asks permission to come in, and he lets her in again. She is the deciding factor on how this all plays out. Because through her, she gets Stack. And Stack is now turned. Now we got two vampires inside. Smoke goes looking for his brother, wants to know why he's not doing his job, finds that Mary is no longer Mary. She's a monster, and his brother is dying. She runs out and tells him cryptically, "Oh, we're gonna have some fun here tonight. We will be back, and runs out. It is through that conversation that Annie starts piecing it together. Stack is dead. He was harmed. I can't bring him back. But what did Mary say? Smoke. And Smoke says, "We." She said, "We." And they go back and forth. And Stack wakes up. Wakes up and tells him that he's feeling okay, that there's nothing wrong. It was just a flesh wound. It's all right. He'll be okay. And she figures it out. She at first thought it was a haint. And a haint, H-A-I-N-T, is an old evil spirit that can possess human beings. They're usually talked about in the South, voodoo, hoodoo, religious and understanding that haints exist. They walk among us and they can get into us. They can touch us. They can influence us, but they're not us. And they can be expelled, removed, and they can jump from body to body. She realizes by Mary's words and by the transformation of Stack, these aren't haints. This is nothing I can ward off. This is nothing I can push out. And this is nothing I can cleanse. This is vampires. And this is different. Your soul is now connected to your dead body. And you are in turmoil because you will never be able to return to your ancestors. You are stuck in this dead body forever. And you're going to have to roam the earth like that as a corpse and a monster, feeding off the bodies and the souls of others. This she tries to explain to the man she loves, Smoke. And he's like, "No, I don't think so." And they go through a ritual of seeing who is affected by garlic, because as Stack talks, she throws some garlic water on him, some pickled garlic juice on him. He burns and runs out. We learn through all of this that the white folks have started converting the people that left once they found out Stack had died. There is a hive mind and an almost like a virus, an infection. The purpose of Remick is to eat and consume the knowledge of the people he bites and infects. The hive mind works together for his will and what he wants. He is the leader and the one that decides what's happening. And through everybody that he bites or gets bitten and transformed, he gains more knowledge. He gets to take the power that you had, the gifts that you had, the language that you learned, the understanding of everything you are. It now belongs to him. You no longer have it because you are just a monster, a mindless monster that follows the basic need of wanting to feed and whoever this monster leader is. And it really is symbolic because he comes in to a place where healing is happening, ancestral communal convival is. We're rejoicing and singing and dancing, touching realms that no one ever can, because Sammy has this gift and it attracts him, and he wants to consume every single one of these people and everything that they are inside and out, to culturally appropriate everything they have to give, every single being and thing. And they give it willingly after a while. They give it willingly. From there, we have an internal struggle. We have people that have left because they were all told to go once they found out that Stack has died. And all those people that left the juke joint, they are now changed because Remick has eaten and consumed all these individuals. During that discussion of what's out there and what's not, the Asian lady tells her husband, who is now in mourning because one of his best friends is dead, and he's scared. She said, nah, go get the car. He said, no, I can't leave my friends. They're in mourning. They're in mourning. I can't leave. She goes, no, we're going to go. We're going to go get the car. And she forces him out, leaving him exposed. And she's protected inside the walls. Remember, there's a protection inside the walls. And we have a struggle, a power struggle of those that are outside trying to get in. And they're all focused on the one thing that would create the magnificent power that this evil entity wanted from the beginning. And that's Sammy's gift. Nikita?
Thank you. Thank you, Jewel. And beautifully done. Beautifully done. We're going to sometimes I'm like, people need to really feel the element of this movie. Remick is an interesting person. I think we all know that there's three sides to the truth, right? Your truth, my truth, and the truth, right? Reading what Ryan Coogler had to say about Remick, I thought it was interesting, and we've all got these ideas, right, about the vampire. First of all, I like vampires. I know Jennifer. I know Jewel. Horror aficionados. We're not aficionados. Yes, we are. We like horror stuff. And there's different age groups in here. All right. And I thought it was very interesting what he said. Yeah. You know, he talks about Remick, and he talks about Remick's family and what he wrote for Remick rather than the KKK. He identifies with what's going on in the juke joint. Yeah, we see him walk up to the juke joint because the music calls him, right? And the fire and the ancestors, it calls him, and that he wants to be a part of it. And he wants all of them to be a part of it. And it's attractive. Now, ironically, they all think he's the devil. Well, it is the South. You know what I'm saying? Okay. And it's interesting what Coogler says about vampirism. He says, vampirism is about sacrifice and what's given up. You can get all this power, but the sacrifice is that you give up the ability for your soul to go to the afterlife. You're stuck in your body, and that's a terrifying mortgage. I would say vampirism is a little bit more than that, but you know, that's the essence of it. You can't die, right? And he made this very, which I think is very academic comment. He was fascinated. What's the Faustian deal around vampirism? I love that Remick is part of a culture that wasn't considered white until recently. He's not the Klan. He doesn't understand that. I would say that's not how I saw it. Oh, he understood the Klan because you see the way he looked at the mask, right? And once he got into their memories and he has been in the South for a minute. Let's be clear. He knows. He knows that time frame and what's happening there. Now, does he think he's doing a good deed by turning clans people into vampires? I don't know, because there's a lot of evil in that. Then he goes, and again, he understands. I respect Mr. Coogler. This is his art, and this is his view. But as a viewer, we also have a right to see the art in a way that we best identify, based on the actors that are acting and representing what the author or the director or the curator wanted for us to see. And when he comes up to see the fire, my first thing was when he heard the music, he walked up, he saw Annie. And when they said Annie was, he said, can I come in? You know, did the old, good old Caucasian gentleman thing, and with his little fiddle and his people, right? And then and they say no. No, we're not letting him in. And why is she in there? And they say, because she's family. Okay, because we always let people in, right? We are the only community that does that. I'm not saying Annie didn't belong there. She literally had Black in her family. We know how that works. And this is Mississippi, much like New Orleans. Mississippi had a lot of, I don't want to offend in this, quadroons and octoroons and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, whether you're 1/8, 1/4, but black is black. One drop, that was the rule. So, and we're talking about plantations also. So he's looking at her and he's like, okay, well, I'm going to play my little fiddle and we're going to do our little dance and they're going to just love it. But see, it's not the same soul, is it? All our lives as black people worldwide, there has been cultural appropriation. He wanted what we had to be a part of him, not so much us to have what he has, because he's the leader, right? So everything he takes is his, and everything he gives us is what he decides, right? Whether it's his memories or whatever. And I just thought that was interesting when he does this little jig, which, let's be clear, the country music, the blues, all that comes from the enslaved, all of it. If you go all the way back to Africa, you will see how they made music. Now, did we play that blend, you know, fiddle stuff? Sometimes. You literally, when they go back inside, they're literally playing that, but their version. All right. And I think a lot of people don't know that. See, a lot of cultural appropriation occurs because you forget where it begins. You forget where the truth begins because it's years and years and years and years of diluting the original, the start. So, you know, they do their little thing and Remick. I just thought it was just interesting how Ryan wanted to make Remick a good guy. In the history of vampires, anybody that's going to suck your blood or whatever, they always promise the world, but the only thing they can promise you is that you'll never see the sun again, and you're going to have to drink a lot of people's blood in order to survive. And, you know, for me, I don't know. I don't think I would ask for that. So I liked the way that he thought about it. I saw it a little bit differently, but in all fairness, that's what makes movies movies, so that we can envision it the way that we want. And I will tell you this, is a beautiful filmmaker that can make you do homework and learn some history and see the project for what it is and still love the project, knowing that people's suffering, people's oppression, people's suppression, people's dignity, and people's souls were at stake. And yet they found joy. And you, the viewer, found joy, not in their suffering and their oppression, but how they rose from it and fought it. Because believe me, they did. I think it's important to watch this movie. And I think it's important to watch this movie with eyes wide open. Watch it a couple of times, three times. Each time I learned something more, each time I became more impressed. And like I said, the fourth time I watched it, I got very emotional because I realized each person in this movie had a trap. Each person in this movie was suffering from something because of something. Each person in this movie wanted their kids or the young to be better. Stack and Smoke wanted Sammy to have a better life and not be like them. And he has a choice to make, right? Mary wanted a life with one of the twins, you know. Everybody, Annie, wanted a life with Smoke, you know. And at the end, everybody got what they wanted in their choice. But was it worth it? Was it worth it? And I think for the only person it was truly worth it for, people it was worth it for. I'm getting emotional thinking about it. Living in the South with the Klan and the heinousness of the Klan, and you see the ending, and I'm going to jump to the ending because it was so impactful. The twins are the premise of the story. All the other bit players put the story together. The perpetrator, Remick, not a good guy, but you kind of start out kind of thinking he's a good guy because he does the jig, but he's a monster and he suffered what monsters do. And red hat, the devil, blue hat, good. One goes to heaven, one goes to hell. But the betrayal that was in this movie really affected me. And I'm going to turn the mic over to Jewel. And when I come back, and before we give the mic to Jennifer for her assessment, because I think that's important, we two, as the speakers here, as the hosts and co-hosts, and literally we're both really hosts, because we're a team. Blurred Words is a team. And the thing about Blurreds is we look outside the box. We look at the lens of different variables, because so many things can be true. But that's the beauty of art. That's the beauty of books. That's the beauty of movies. That's the beauty of music. And one idea makes for a very boring film. A movie that can spark a conversation, like I said, is genius. And we hope when you watch this, it sparks many conversations. And I hope you research. And I hope you do homework about the Mississippi Delta. I hope you do homework about, you know, religious aspects, cultural aspects, musical aspects, ritualistic aspects. You know, they considered hoodoo good, but hoodoo saved lives in this movie. They considered hoodoo bad. I'm sorry, but because you, look where Annie was at, out in the bayou, where her baby was. Look where Smoke and Sammy end up. So much symbolism. From the clothing, from the music, from the currency, from the time, even from the sky. Symbolism from the sky. Brilliant, brilliant movie. Taking earth, taking nature, taking land, taking air, taking body, taking voice, and ultimately taking soul. I just thought it was a beautiful, beautiful message about life and death, the spirits, and the movement of our people, the movement of Black people through the world, and in the fluidity and sometimes the danger of that. Jewel?
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Nikita. And you're absolutely right. What makes it gloriously beautiful being a blurred, being a nerd, is the ability to see things differently, openly, in so many different ways. And there is no right, there's no wrong. It's just, how can we have a bigger, brighter conversation about the coolest stuff that we've ever seen? And in this particular film, the symbolism spoke to me in so many ways. And for me, since it starts off with This Little Light of Mine and the hymn and the church, I saw symbolism and to jump off of your hoodoo and how it was seen as bad, we know where hoodoo starts off with and the connection it ties to Africa and the enslaved. And we know that there is this idea of conversion or assimilation or appropriation. Our religion was bad. Who we were was bad. The entire film is called Sinners. And in the realm of sinners, there must be a definition. And sinners are people that go against God. And in this movie, for me, God in this case is a representation of colonialism, whiteness, and the white Christian God. We see that when Sammy walks into the church and everything is white. Everybody's dripped in white. Remick is offering a godly power and he's white. We see that the only real salvation comes from the protection that Annie gives us, not the whiteness. And the symbolism in the Trinity for me were in the vultures, because you have the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit in three, the three birds. But
I think we lost you there, Jewel. I think we lost you. Is your mic good? Okay, while we wait for Jewel's mic to come back, I'm going to go ahead and, because we've been talking for a while, and I'm curious as to how Jennifer sees things while I wait for Jewel's mic to come back, if you don't mind. Jennifer, what did you think of the movie?
I love the movie on so many levels because there were so much blackness in this movie. That was my impression. And I don't think there's enough of that out there nowadays. So that was probably my overall impression of the movie. There was just so much blackness in there. I really did love this movie. This will probably be my favorite Ryan Coogler movie over all the other ones, although I do love all the other movies from Fruit, because I remember Fruitvale Station, and that was, you know, and that was really the first time that I actually started paying attention to Michael B. Jordan as an actor, too. Wow, this movie just blew me away. And like you, Nikita, I saw it several times in the theater. I just wanted to consume it. I really just wanted to soak it up and just enjoy as much of it as I could. Because like so many other Black people, to me, my Blackness is a refuge. So that was my overall thought on the whole movie going experience. I love the cinematography. I saw it in IMAX. I listened to all the commentaries of Ryan Coogler and the actors that were, you know, the ensemble of actors that were main characters in this movie, Black actors. And I just couldn't get enough of learning about Ryan Coogler's this movie being such a personal movie for him, and all of the creative choice that he made in this movie were very personal for him. And then I found out why. And that just made it feel more personal to me. This is a man who, when he was making Fruitvale Station, while he was, oh gosh, I should have wrote this down so I can remember it correctly. But while he was making movies, his uncle passed away. His favorite uncle passed away, and he wasn't able to be there around that time. And he made this movie as an homage or as a tribute to his uncle, who was from the South, who had roots in the South, and who was an incredible blues music enthusiast, right? He loved blues music. His uncle loved blues music, and he said he had memories of his uncle playing blues music and talking about what life was like for him in the South before he, you know, left the South, which was, you know, if anybody knows anything about history, which is, you know, that whole period of time, sounds like his uncle was involved or participated in that period of time when Black people were leaving the South because of all the lynching that was going on. So this movie felt very personal to me in many ways, because I am from the South myself, born and raised, because I was raised up in the church, and a lot of the themes in here were so biblical. I mean, even in the title, as you ladies have already mentioned, even in the title, it was, you know, I was hooked. I was like, uh-oh. I was like, oh, what's this about? It just gave me so much Black girl joy. This movie, it did. I mean, I probably got on the people's nerves in the theater because I found things to be hilariously entertaining that other people might not have, because I am a horror enthusiast. I am a horror, you know, I just love horror movies because I grew up watching them, you know? And this was, I was so, okay, let me be truthful. Let me tell you my truth from the beginning. I was interested in the movie, yes, but I got hooked when I saw that first trailer and I realized, oh my gosh, this is going to be a horror movie too. I was like, yes! I trust it. You know, I like Ryan Coogler as a director, as a creative, you know, Black person out here in the, oh gosh, I just love this movie so much in so many ways. So anyway, I wanted to mention some things that I thought were very interesting. I wrote, you know, because I'm a blurred. I wrote notes in the theater on my phone because I wanted to remember all of the things that stood out to me in this movie. And that's why I kept going back to watch it, because I was like, what was that? What did they say? What happened? So Crystal, well, I have to give props to Crystal. I'm so sorry. Jewel. Have to give props to Jewel because I did not notice the three crows. Now I'm going to have to go back and watch the movie again to catch the three crows. I did not notice that. There were several omens in this movie that made me know, even after I saw the trailer, that made me know that something bad was going to happen. I didn't know what it was first time I watched the movie, but every single thing, there were so many omens. And that's the one that I missed. I did miss the three crows. I did miss that. That was an omen. But the first omen was, of course, in the very beginning, when you hear Annie's voice and they're showing, and I think y'all put it up in the Jumbotron of the tapestry. I believe this is a tapestry. It looks like woven, you know, things. The tapestry, there's a being peeking through the wind, look like a window, with red eyes. And I was like, okay, that's not good. That was my first time. And I was like, yeah, it's going to be some this is not good. The red eyes in the tapestry at the very beginning when she was talking about it. And I thought, oh gosh. And it's interesting that it was a tapestry that they used, because what was woven into this story from the very beginning was the fact that Native Americans, Africans, West Africans to be specific, and Irish people all have a belief, right, in this special person who can make music or possess a gift of singing that can pierce the veil between the living and the dead. They can conjure spirits from the past and the future, which is useful to their communities because it can heal them. But the downside to that is it can also attract evil. And that's what I missed the first time around. And I didn't catch that last part about the gift that can attract evil until after it came out of theaters and became, you know, until the movie was on streaming services. And when I watched it on streaming, I was like, oh my gosh, I missed that. See, this is why you got to watch movies like so many times, because you miss stuff. The first couple of times you miss stuff, but I did catch that once the movie went on to the streaming services and I was able to watch it on streaming services. That's very important. So there was the omen of the red eyes, the three crows. And then there was another omen with the rattlesnake jump scare. Like that was like, okay, so that's not good. Snakes biblically are not good, right? Because the snake that showed up in the Garden of Eden, okay? Snakes are gotten good. I was like, oh gosh, this is not good. I saw that, I was like, yeah, this isn't good. This is not good. This is not good. So, but also in that scene, what I noticed is Stack mentioning something about the juke joint being for us and by us. And I was like, that made me think of FUBU, which is a reference to a clothing brand. But I was like, It was a black clothing brand called FUBU. And I was like, I thought that was cute. He put that in there. Cause we have to remember, this is Ryan Coogler and this is his brainchild, you know, he wrote this literally. So I was like, okay, that's cute. He put that in there. I thought that was cute. I thought it was a little cute. No. The other omen was when Smoke was asking Grace to make the signs, and Bo mentions to him while they're negotiating the price that they only have the color red. Okay, so here we go with the red again. Now, biblically, that's significant. You know, the blood of Jesus and all of that. But in horror movies, that's not a good thing. It's really not a good thing. So I was like, there's another omen. I was like, oh, gosh. So you know, the whole time I'm sitting in the theater, I'm like, okay, something bad is going to happen. I just don't know what it is. Something bad. There were other little notes that I noticed. Like Nikita mentioned about the scene with the actor Dearward Lindo, who plays Delta Slim, and he's talking about how he would play, get as much corn liquor as he could drink, and he says, a sinner like me can't ask for much more than that. And I was like, okay, so here we go. Because I'm not sure if I like this part, but this reference in the movie, because it seems like to me there's always this, you know, constant struggle between good and evil, which is a theme in this movie also. This constant back and forth between good and evil. Like, I don't understand how we considered what Delta Slim did to survive his experience evil, because he calls himself a sinner. Because to me, he sanctified himself through his music. That's just my opinion, though. So I'm just like, there's always a conflict like that with me because of my upbringing. And there's always those conversations in the church. And it's another part of the black experience, the black church specifically, that institution where you have this conflict between people who go to church, who believe in the church, who follow the faith, and the people who don't. So that was represented there. To me, that's what that scene represented to me. There were a lot. Should I mention this? There were a lot of references to black love in this movie. I thought it was very beautiful. I always like to see that in movies also. I don't think there's enough of it out there in movies. The relationship that Sammy was developing with Pearline, the relationship that was rekindled between Stack and his old girlfriend Mary. And of course, one of my favorite scenes with Annie and Smoke. And I thought this was their whole relationship. That was probably my favorite one. Their whole relationship in this movie, Annie and Smoke, was probably my favorite one in this black love. Because their relationship was very deep. You could tell it was a very deep relationship. There may have been a lot of resentments and a lot of issues they went through, but they had a very deep love and appreciation for each other, even when they were away. And it just reminds me of how strong a bond can be between people who love and understand each other. To me, that shows a spiritual element to their love, and it's just not physical. It's not just physical. It's more than that. So I really did like seeing that. I also like Annie because she has the name of a very, very important person in my life, was named Annie. So I like that. it was interesting to me that she was Annie descended from root workers. She talked about her grandma being a root worker. Annie practices hoodoo. I thought that was beautiful. That's another element of Blackness that I've only recently, you know, as an adult, learned about and been, immersing myself in the knowledge that the people that I come from had these beliefs. And it wasn't nothing wrong with these beliefs because, you know, when you grow up and you attend these institutions, these educational institutions that are mostly run, the programs and the classes and all that, the programs are run by people who don't understand Blackness. They don't understand Black people. They don't respect our history. So you don't learn about our history in a positive way. It's always in a negative way. And that always was the way that I had learned it. And so it was, I mean, even in college, you would think that in a higher, you know, outside of high school, you would see something different. But even in college, West African religions were, I heard it referred to as pagan, which to me seemed like a derogatory term. Right. Like it's not respectful of the people that have the religions that are not Christian, you know, that are not Christian, that are not, you know, Catholic or any other of the major religions, Muslim. You know, it's just because it's not one of those doesn't mean it should be invalidated. And that's something that I've had to learn. And that's something that I've learned to appreciate about the people that I come from. There's mention of the money that they used on the plantation. Oh gosh, or what used to be a plantation. I know that I did my research and I looked up these plantations that were the names that were mentioned in the movie, Maybelle Plantation, Sunshine Plantations. The money that they used, the wooden nickels or the wooden coins, I should say. All of that was a reminder of what my people went through, what my ancestors went through at that time back in the 1930s, like what our lives were like, what we were left to deal with after slavery ended. So all of that seemed really important to me. Again, as Nikita mentioned, this wasn't presented in a cringy way. He didn't do the cringe African people in slavery type thing in this movie. He did something that showcased our people as a people who survived, who figured it out, who were able to even surpass our situations through other means that were outside of the physical. Like we were able to do that. Even in these hard times. So the scene with the Choctaws, I hope I'm saying this correctly, Choctaws, showing up for the vampire guy. I love this stuff. Okay, I'm not as big a fan of vampire movies and the whole, you know, the lore, the mythology as Nikita is, but I do enjoy vampire stuff. And every time there was a vampire reference in this movie, it reminded me of the first movie, vampire movie that I loved called Fright Night. So the guy shows up and he's all burning up in the sun and his skin is all crispy. I was like, now why they had to do the man like this? It was funny to me. I thought it was hilarious. I'm so sorry. The people in the theater,
probably thought I was aggravating. They probably thought I was aggravating because I was laughing at these scenes because it was just funny to me. I just was like, why is his skin all crispy like this? It was hilarious to me. I was like, Lord, he's, and they had smoke coming up off of him. It was so good. I loved it. I was like, yeah, this is a good vampire movie, dude. Like, and then all the little extra details. Well, and I liked how when the Choctaw, man was trying to warn, the white woman, he was like, I hope you don't let them in your house. And that reminded me that, you know, vampires always need an invitation. You have to invite them in. So I was like, I don't know if people remember those rules. And so, you know, I'm a regular horror fan. So I know this stuff. I was like, oh gosh, this is the vampire. Cause you know, in the previews, you see, you know, in the trailers and the teasers that were put out before the movie, I didn't watch all of them until after I saw the movie because I didn't want a whole lot of spoilers or anything like that. But I was like, okay, so this guy must be like very important. That made me think this guy is very important in the story. And of course he was. That was Ramek. He's very important. And I like how Jewel mentions that there's, where there was one, now there's three. Yeah, I noticed that too, but I didn't make any notes of it. But I do understand that three is one of the Old Testament numbers of perfection. So there's another biblical reference in a movie called Sinners. There's another biblical reference in a movie called Sinners in the Old Testament of the Bible. One of the perfect numbers, there's four of them. One of the perfect numbers is three. And three means, I looked this up, means divine perfection, which is really contradictory to what this whole movie is about. But yeah, I was like, okay, so they're putting it in there. They're putting in all these references to the Bible and good and evil and all of that stuff. I also noticed that, there was a reference to the drinking preferences of the folk that showed up at the juke joint at the club. I think they call it club juke. That's what they decided to call it. Club juke. There was Irish whiskey, Italian wine, and there was corn liquor. And it seemed like there was a scene where it seemed like the sharecropper, he preferred the corn liquor. And so it made me want to look it up. So I looked it up. Corn liquor. Moonshine, a.k.a. moonshine. Okay. Moonshine, as it turns out, as I learned, is very significant to our community, to the Black community. Especially after slavery, because it was a way for the formerly enslaved to survive economically. And also it was a cultural expression, which, okay, like I said, I was just learning this. I'm just learning this stuff. I'm just like, this is just wonderful because I have heard references to corn liquor in other Black movies. That I've watched, they drink corn liquor in other blue, specifically not just Black movies, but specifically other blues movies where they showcase blues, music in the movie. They like corn liquor. Now I know because it was a cultural thing for formerly enslaved Black people to drink. It was a way for them to earn money. It was a way for us to in some ways escape our oppression because we were able to it was economic. It enabled us to survive economically. And also, I looked up that it was a way for Black people to resist. Okay. The
the controlling, you know, systems, the systems were, that were trying to control them. This is something they could make themselves, produce themselves, and sell themselves. So, you know, that was a way to escape that. And I thought that was interesting that once again, there was a, you know, corn liquor reference and a blues movie. So, yeah, I thought that was important. Then there was the references to Sunflower Plantation, which is really a reference to Sunflower County, which is, you know, oh gosh, this is that legacy of sharecropper type lifestyle that Black people had to live and endure after enslavement. We were sharecropping that in real history, you know, in actual history, we were sharecropping the properties that the property that was in Sunflower County, Mississippi. So it was filled with so many good historical Black references, like how I made a note of how of a cute reference that I thought was cute when Sammy, when Pearline shows up and Sammy starts talking to her, because, you know, he's trying to get with her, but he's talking to her and he's talking about his relationship with his cousins. And she was like, y'all must be play cousins. I was like, oh yes, yes. That's some Black stuff right there. I was like, yeah, we do that. We have play cousins. We have Black folk like to call our skin folk who ain't kin folk play cousins, play aunties. I had play aunties. I had, I don't remember having a lot of play cousins, but I had play aunties. These are, you know, references that helped us, I guess it helped us to stick together, to like stay close to one another. I like my play aunties. I don't know about anybody else. And but you know, Sam had to clarify that, nah, we actually blood related. So she was like, it was funny to me because she was like, you seem like such a nice boy, Sammy. And I was like, he was like, I ain't trying to be nice tonight, but it was funny. It was, that whole little scene was funny to me. I liked it. It was just hilarious. I was cracking up in the theater. I was like, really? That's some Black people stuff. Okay. That whole little conversation, that's some Black people stuff. Let's see. There was two times that I noticed the twins, Smoke and Stack, were greeting their respective ladies, their women, their respective exes, whom they had left when they left the South and went to Chicago. When they came back, they, you know, I'm not gonna say they got back together, because that's not really what happened, but they got back, when they got back home and got back in touch with their ladies, it was something that both of them said that resonated with me. And it was funny how in both of their relationships, the similarity I saw in both of their love relationships, they always had to be forced to tell the woman that they obviously love, that I love you. And I thought that was interesting. And I thought it was interesting because I know from, you know, prior research and, you know, learning about our people, that Black people learned not to display their love to each other when we were enslaved. We learned not to do that because we knew that was something that master could use against us, right? If we would outwardly profess our love to each other, master would know, and he would do things to us, separate us, which they did anyway, but he would do it maliciously. So when he knew that we were married or in love with each other. So it's fun. That resonated with me, that both when Smoke saw Annie and was conversating with her, and she had to like, I remember him specifically saying to Annie, so you're going to make me say this. And then he would say, I love you.
And the same thing happened when Mary showed up at the juke joint and she had to draw it out of Stack, and Stack said, I love you. But the thing about Mary and Stack's relationship was that he said something that was very, very significant to me. And he said, I love you. I think about you every day. But he also said, I just wanted you to be safe. And that was never going to be here. And that was never going to be with me. And I thought that was so, I was like, oh my God, he just summed up the whole relationship that him and his brother had with both of their women. And basically, not just with their women, but with the people that they love in the South. Like, they knew that they were such, they knew these guys, these twins know their, how their reputation was in the South. They know how troublesome their father's, even their father's reputation was. So they felt like it was better for them to be away from the people that they loved, to go, you know, far away, to go into the army and, you know, and go and, you know, and stay away from the people that they love so that the people that they love could be safe, because they understood that their behavior brought them trouble sometimes. Okay. So I thought that was very interesting. The whole scene, which seems to be the scene where Sammy does his performance in the juke joint and Club Juke, that was so amazing. It blew me away. It was so amazing. And I was so glad to see that so many other people who saw it thought that it was amazing too. The way that he did that whole scene, even the actors were talking about how amazing this scene was, where he was singing. And he was, and you could see how he was, his gift was just coming out onto the screen about how he was conjuring up our ancestors from the past, the living ancestors, the deceased ones, how he was, you could see all of that happening. And I love that part of the scene where you can see, because Annie talked about in the beginning movie about piercing the veil, and you can kind of see how he tried to do that cinematically, or he did that cinematically when the camera pans to the ceiling of the club, and you see the ceiling like burning away. It was just amazing. The whole scene was amazing. All of the different parts of the music that was playing, and they were showing how blues music indeed did come from formerly enslaved people. It came from us. Blues music came from us. It came from out of the oppression that and the just harsh reality we were living in, and how that transformed into other forms of music, hip hop or rap, and you know, just, it was just so beautiful. I just love seeing that, about how that all played out, which, you know, I already had some knowledge of, but it was beautiful to see how he portrayed it on the screen. It was beautiful. And of course the actor, his singing was really on point too. The actor, I can't remember his name, I should have, but the actor that played Sammy, his voice was really great too. I was incredibly surprised and enjoyed his singing. It was great. It was great. Caton, I think it's something Caton, C-A-T-O-N. Who's very religious and comes from a very religious family, you know, church, raised in a church, also the actor that played Sammy. So I thought that was very interesting. Let me see. Nikita made me laugh. She was talking about Ramek showing up with his two with the two white folk and playing his little fiddle. I thought that was so funny. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to the people that I was laughing so hard. He showed up with the little fiddle. It was so, that whole scene was so funny to me. I was like, why did he think he was finna get in this club, showing up with this fiddle and playing this music like this. I'm like, what was you really thinking, dude? Really? Like, I was like, how did you think that was gonna work? I was like, your little fiddle, that is not finna make it inside this club. Why did you think that was gonna work? I don't know. I was like, that was hilarious to me. I was like, so you finna show up with your white skin, your non-melanated skin, at this place that you know is full of black people, and you finna show up and try to interrupt that? Man, come on now. You need to stop. I was like, yeah, you need to stop. But I thought it was hilarious. You showed up with a little fiddle, and they thought they was gonna be able to play this little song and get interested. I was like, what, did you just think that was gonna happen? Yeah, no, that was not gonna happen. So I like that you brought that up too. I noticed that too. I was like, so what in the world is going on? I thought it was hilarious. And you know, if you look online, a lot of people, I think that's why a lot of people thought it was racist, but I don't think it was racist. I was like, I just thought it was funny. I was like, why you thought you was gonna be able to get into this black space playing your interpretation of black music? Okay, whatever. Okay, whatever. That don't work. I also thought it was interesting that both the women, it's interesting to me that in that scene, both the women, Mary and Annie, the looks that they gave these white people and how they both was like feeling the same way. And they was kind of doing that, that semi-telepathic thing that women, black women or women in general do, where we're like, okay, so girl, what is this? Both of them kind of gave each other looks and they was like, okay, so what is this? What is this? Girl, this don't seem right. This don't seem right. They looking at each other. They talking with their eyes. And you know what I'm saying? They say it a lot without saying anything. And Annie was like, it's not, and Annie specifically said, I wrote this down, that they give me the withers and not just that the fact that they're white. It's something else, which goes into Annie having all of her spiritual talents, her spiritual discernment. And I thought that was interesting. Sammy and his cousin Smoke have a conversation about Mound Bayou, which was a real free black town in Mississippi. It was a real place founded by former slaves. I looked it up. It was an independent, self-sufficient black community. It existed. It was a safe haven during the Jim Crow era. I thought that was interesting. I'm glad that he put that stuff in there, because a lot of times I think when it comes to the narrative of slavery in this country, it always tries to make it seem like black people just bowed down to it and we didn't fight back, when in reality we actually did in several ways. So I thought that was a good reference to put into the movie. It kind of threw me off that Smoke pulled out a gun on this little cousin and was like, boy, I'm a soldier. You just gave me a command. I was like, are you really going to shoot your cousin? I was like, come on now, Smoke, calm down. But I think Smoke was already having, you know, some issues about the money going on around there. But I was like, dude, you going to pull a gun on your cousin? Like, I thought that was a little bit fun. I don't know what was going through Smoke's mind at that time. I was like, okay, Smoke, you need to calm down a little bit. I thought he was, until then, the calm twin. Until then, I thought he was a twin that kind of kept this cool. But right then, it seemed like he was like trying to lose it a little bit. I don't know. Maybe he was just trying to make a point, and he did, because Sammy shut his mouth about that. But it was just interesting in that whole conversation about Mound Bayou. I thought it was Mount Bayou. It's Mound Bayou. Mound with a D. That's what it was actually called. I didn't like how Mary went out there to talk to the vampires. I didn't like that. They took advantage of her. They could tell that she was already in pain. You know, which I'm not sure how they could tell. But, that, you know, they're vampires. I guess they were being very perceptive, but whatever. They they could see that she was in a lot of pain, and I think they took advantage of her, and I think that's how they were able to get her first. I made a note of this during the movie that the real name of Stack is Elias, and his brother Smoke, his real name is Elijah, which are biblical names. Okay, another reference to the Bible. They are biblical names from the Old Testament of the Bible. Elias, the Greek form of the Hebrew name Elijah. So basically, they both had the same name out of the Old Testament of the Bible. Elias and Elijah, both names of a prophet from the Old Testament. I was, wow. I thought that was, yeah. I was like, he really did do his due diligence when he was, you know, putting all these details in this movie. It was really good. I liked it. I didn't like that whole scene about the, you know, about how Stack was turned. But I did like that Annie was able to help them figure out what was really going on, because nobody was able. It was a lot of confusion up until Annie realized that, hey, we're not dealing with Haints, we're dealing with vampires. Like, she thought it was Haints in the beginning, but you know, then she realized we're dealing with vampires. And then she knows, then they came up with a plan. I was like, oh yes, this is my favorite part of the movie. When people finally figured out what's actually going on, what is the actual threat, and they go ahead and fight. Decide how they're gonna fight back. And I thought that was good. Let's see.
Hey, hold on a minute. I'm sorry. We're on 90 minutes.
Oh my gosh, really?
No. You were putting in a lot of information there, a lot of information. Yeah. Don't worry. You're still going to be able to talk. But I need to go ahead and move. Hey, Emily, good to see you. Jennifer, Jewel, can you please open your mic for a minute? Can you hear me? Jewel. Yeah, I don't know. Something's happening with that mic. Hold on. So don't want to have like gaps. So because we're recording. Welcome, Emily. This is the new platform we're trying to work while we see if Jewel's mic will work, because I know she can hear Emily and I know she can hear Jennifer. So hold on. Because this is something, while we're testing, we'll have to put in a trouble call on this. So I'm going to do the same thing I did the last time, and it seemed to bring the co-host mic back. So just a minute for me. All right, Jewel, grab it. Can you check it, please?
Hello, can you hear me?
Hoorah, there you go. That is a technical problem. So Jewel, go ahead. You have the mic. And Jennifer, you're going to get to speak again. Go on, Jewel.
First of all, love the notes, Jennifer. Hey, Emily, thank you for joining us. That was wonderful. I really, really... Real quickly, I don't know what was heard and what was not heard, but I would just wanted to put in there that the symbolism from the name of the movie is a shout out to us being categorized just for existence and where we come from as ungodly. We are sinners. And like you said, Delta Slim explains who and what he is, and all he really is a blues player, and he is seen as a sinner. And Annie is a sinner because she practices hoodoo, which is our original religion. And I was tying that into the symbolism of Christianity, which we know the Klan was run on the idea of burning of crosses in Christianity. And Remick comes in And the three birds represent the harbingers of death, but they are also the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. They are the beginning of the Christianity, a white God, a white Savior, a white Jesus. And the only way that we are cleansed from that when we fall, pray to it over and over and over again, was a symbolic baptism in the water where Sammy kills the blood of the devil, who is, by the way, an angel, a white man selling a bunch of amazing powers. And he laughs in his face and says, "Don't you know I know that prayer too?" And he says it in his whole Irish accent, "Our Father, who art in heaven," and continues, but it's not going to save him, because Christianity in this moment in time will not save the sinner. There is no blood here to wash them clean. It is our own ancestry and our own blood and our own culture that will save us. And when it's penetrated, when they come in and take from us, they quite literally harm us and kill us. And Sammy saves everyone that is left by killing him in the baptism of the cleanliness of the water. I just thought that was amazing. That's how I saw the symbolism. Everything you said, Jennifer, was brilliant. I love the blackness. I love the black love. I loved every iteration. I agree. I love Smoke and Annie's relationship. And I'm sad that it was the relationship between Mary and Stack that brought a divide between the brothers. And it is one, you know, there's the belief that twins are one soul divided in half. And if you look at it that way, they are the good and the bad side of this one soul that just had to try and exist in this world. And it was severed. It was severed because of this demon that came in and decided to take everything. But that was great. And we thank you so much for joining us. This is an amazing movie. If you have not seen it, there, I promise you, see it. You will love it. And then when you see it again, you will see more things that you did not see the first time. And then the third time, you're going to see more things that you didn't see the first two times, and the symbolism and everything in it. It was amazing. The only way to be saved for us as Black folks is to follow our own culture and our own people and bring us through from the past, not forgetting it, into the future. And that's what I got from it. Not the anything to save us from what the white Christians have to give us. That's how I saw it. But so much more to learn, and I can't wait to see it another two times. Nikita. Hey, Emily.
Oh, thank you so much, Jewel. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Emily. Since this is not like the other applications, like a 90-minute set for recording, but we can talk after, I think the contemplation will be like after the pod, you know? So we'll have these podcasts, and they'll be at 90 minutes. We'll record, and we'll discuss what we need to discuss. Before we close out on Sinners, though, I think that we would be remiss if we didn't bring up The Sugar Shack by Ernie Barnes. That artwork was prominent in the movie. Those of us growing up during about 70s, 80s, you know, we saw that, the imagery of the black people dancing in the club. Remember, during the scene, it was very important. It's classic. It's also on our website, blurredsword.com. You will find the podcast when we post it. You will also find that we have other audio offerings. I think Emily had to step out. Hopefully everybody can hear me. I guess I should have checked. We will also have, there we go, where we have a blog, and you know, it's pretty cool. We talk about movies, books, games, etc. But in the blog, on the website, we talk about and thank Jewel for that. She brought it up, reminded me. It's brilliant to have a partner in crime, in friendship, in the world, in life, that actually understands what you're trying to do. And all the things from that movie played perfectly in conjunction, in combination, bringing up the Sugar Shack, understanding what Mr. Coogler was trying to say, listening to you, Jennifer. Look, I live in the South. I know all about corn liquor. Okay, I've been to the Ozarks, dude. I grew up drinking some of that. So you're absolutely correct. That history is very, very important. Understand Jack Daniels, Uncle Nearest, really truthfully, and when we think about those stills and the money that they were making, you're absolutely correct, because they were being treated as indentured servants, but that money wasn't real, so they were still enslaved, you know, and people didn't really see that. You know, it's like when you're a little kid and you play with play money and you think you can spend that and you can't do anything with that money. That's literally what they were doing. And to me, that the insult of it, do you know what I mean? And I think Smoke and Stack saw that. But when we talk about this movie and we look at it, I'm so glad you were doing your homework, Miss Jennifer. I am so glad that you understood the importance, being a nerd blurb, that's what we do, right? We make notes and we watch it and we see the things that we missed before. It's the brilliance of having someone like Jewel who, you know, catches what I miss. And then we have these back and forths. Child, you don't even want to know how we be talking. You know, and of course, Jennifer be siding with Jewel all the time. I don't even know what that's all about. But, you know, I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that because the part that you agreed with me was importante. Okay. I'm like, finally, she agreed to stuff. That's funny to me. And I'm like, you know, and it's cool though. It's cool because we can all watch the same thing and then we can all talk about it. And it's insightful because I'm like, oh man, I missed that too. Or I saw this, because you have no idea the conversation Jewel and I had about those three birds up in the sky. It was crazy. And then I hear Jennifer, you know, it's this, that, and the other. And I'm like, oh no, she's one. I'm all talking about life and death. It's funny to me. It's funny. But I think it's perfectionism. And I think that's what makes things like this cool. I think we need more spaces like this and avenues like this where we can have these conversations and we can all watch these things. Look, I'm a huge vampire fan. And I saw an article, and I think I listened to a podcast, and they said, well, you know, it's just a vampire movie. I didn't like it. I thought it was just a musical. And I said, you didn't look at this with your third eye. You looked at this with the lens of, I hate horror, but you live horror every day and you have to see that, but you couldn't watch this. I just thought that was very interesting. And, but you know, that's just my view, you know, how I see things. And I just think that this movie is important and I am so glad they made a lot of money and I hope they continue to make money. And for those that are listening to this and will listen to this, I hope you watch the movie and I hope you watch it again. And I hope you understand that in order to move forward in the present, you have to recognize the past. Our ancestors speak through us, you know, and I love that they had an after in this movie, by the way. Please watch it. I don't want to spoil that. But the song Take Me in Your Arms Tonight, for me, like I said, represented past, present, and future Sammy as he pierced the veil between life and death. And with that song, we hear our people. And when we hear our people, we be free. All right. So that was impactful to me. And that that messed with my, it got me to my soul. It got me to my soul. Even when Sammy said that night, it was the best night of my life. You know, the scariest, most terrifying night of his life. That was the first time he was free. And then Stack says, that was the last night I saw the sun with my brother. Yeah. So, you know, it's amazing. Please watch it. And I want to thank you all. And we're going to continue to talk after. I don't want the audio to run out. By the way, this is our first time recording on this platform. We hope to, our future is bright if you help us make it bright. We hope to record more things for Blurred's Words. We hope to show people that to be a blurred, you don't have to be, or even a nerd. You don't have to be young. You don't have to be old. You don't have to be white. You don't have to be male. You just have to be interested in the unique and the outside and be able to accept that there's shades of gray. And that gray can make magic, and the uniqueness of art, whether it be music, whether it be movies, whether it be books, whether it be video games, those things are important, I think, in defining you. The world doesn't define you. you know, your ability to dream, your ability to see, your ability to expand, you know, and to imagine. Blurs have imagination. And in that imagination, we also have common sense. Okay. And I think that is important. And to be Black and to be a nerd is not to be unusual. To be Black and to be a nerd, I believe, is to accept the unusual along with the usual, and to be clear that on this earth, everything is not opaque, you know, everything is not plastic. What we experience can be beautiful. Star Trek, prime example. Now we got electric doors. Ryan Coogler, a Black man, made a vampire movie in the South. He didn't co-opt vampirism. That has always been in horror. He reimagined it through the eyes of oppression and suppression and turned it into a social commentary. That's brilliant. And not everybody can do that. And that's why I'm a blurred. And I'm pretty sure that's why the women in this room are. So I want to thank you. Hope to see you again. We're going to be doing some other things. Star Trek being one of those things, BT dubs. So thank you, Emily. Thank you, Jennifer. And especially thank you, Jewel, because without you, this wouldn't be possible. When we get this up and done, hopefully you'll check it out. Check out our website, share, let folks know. We're going to get better. Today was our first time, a little bit of blips. After I edit it, I'll make sure you get a copy of it and you get to hear it. And we're going to do after this. Thank you. Hope to see you again the next time. Peace.